So we would like to move this last session, which is where the reports on the working groups of the Stop TB partnership will be presented by the chairs. And we'll have three presentations. One is on the childhood TB subgroup by Dr. Robert, then another on task force on retooling. The chair of the task force on retooling, Dr. Vinan Nantulia, will present, and the last presentation would be from the outgoing chair of the TB-HIV working group, Dr. Giz Alizinga, that is the span of TB control to eliminate a global emergency. So I think if everyone agrees, again in the same fashion, should we have question answer with each after each presentation or after all presentations? It's after each presentation. Okay, fine. This time, because it's a different, so better to have a question answer after each presentations. So I would request the first speaker now, the chair of the childhood TB subgroup, Dr. Robert, to kindly present his on update on policy recommendations from the childhood TB.
I think we can sit down. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the organizers of this symposium for giving me the opportunity to report back to you on what I would regard as from childhood tuberculosis as a large movement in the last 2 years. The childhood subgroup was formed 2.5 years ago from the Union, the World Health Organization, the NIH, the CDC, and people like myself who come from academic background and universities. So you can imagine how frightening it is for me as a university person to move into the world where everything is very uncertain for me. But the areas that we have been working on, it's been in policy. The Childhood TB Working Group is a very small group of highly motivated volunteers, and we have mostly been working at union meetings or by email. And the areas we've been working in is the promotion of mainstreaming of childhood tuberculosis and prevention and care as part of routine NTB activities. We've been looking at the recommended drug doses. We've been working with others in developing child-friendly formulas of anti-TB drugs. We've engaged in trying to improve recording and reporting. We're promoting operational research. And we're doing advocacy for childhood tuberculosis. So I'd like to report on some of the areas and what we've achieved in those areas. So the first thing, our first aim was to mainstream childhood tuberculosis into routine NTP activities. To be able to do this, we had to develop the guidance for NTPs on the management of childhood tuberculosis as a consensus document. This we have now achieved, and each of you that will attend this conference will find that in your bag we have this guidance for your proposal and for hopefully for your implementation. This has been a major source of our work, and from this we've been able to convince others that this is an important issue. We were able to influence the editor of the International Journal of Tuberculosis and Lung Disease. I can't imagine why we were able to influence her to actually run an editorial in her journal. We were also able to publish in a serialized form in 4 chapters, of which the first 2 chapters have now been published in the International Journal of the Introduction and Diagnosis of Tuberculosis in Children and Anti-Tuberculosis Treatment in Children. You will see this is published by the Stop TB Partnership, and it's an official statement. So we're starting to try and disseminate these guidelines to the rest of the tuberculosis world. But we have still got a long way to go in the dissemination of these guidelines, and our next step is in actual fact to work through the DOTS Expansion Working Group, which I must tell you has been a very, very positive experience for myself, in promoting the uptake of NTPs in main policy recommendations. And we've now, as a group, been approached by various TB, national TB programs, into helping them develop guidelines which be appropriate to their NTP program. So this is all very promising. While developing the guidelines, we realized there were two areas that required a lot of work. The one area being drug dosages. And the first drug that we had a look at was ethambutol. And we commissioned a literature review, and this was thoroughly investigated by a colleague of mine, Professor Peter Donald, and he wrote a review which was accepted by the, was accepted by the subgroup and has now been officially published. And the review, it was very clear that the dosages of ethambutol we were using in children was far too low, and that the dose now accepted is 20 milligrams per kilogram with a range of 15 to 25 milligrams per kilogram. We now need to promote this new WH policy through that DOTS expansion working group network for technical assistance. What has also become clear when we reviewed the literature that the drug dosage of the other anti-TB drugs also need the same kind of review, and this will form part of the focus of our work in the future. The third area we saw that there was a lack of child-friendly formulations of anti-TB drugs. National TB program managers were approaching us and asking us if they go to the global drug facility, there are no childhood-friendly drugs available. So through sustainable data collection, through routine national TB recording and reporting systems, we hope to be able to stimulate pharmaceutical companies to manufacture child-friendly drugs. Now, most exciting has been an agreement of unit aid to support child-friendly formulations. And this has resulted in the first drugs to be scrutinized in the middle of this month, and hopefully child-friendly formulations will become available to national TB programs through the Global Drug Facility. Improved recording and reporting. There's a dire lack of good data on childhood tuberculosis in most TB countries. And this became very clear that if we aren't able to get children recorded and reported, we would never know what the size of the epidemic was. We would never know how much drugs we would require for various age groups. So it became policy that, I was most excited this morning to see it reported, that the routine recording of recording and reporting of children in two age bands, 0 to 4 years and 5 to 14 years, will from now on become part of the essential recording and reporting system. This is very exciting, and I'm sure it's going to help a lot. It also has other spin-offs, which we will be able to, by monitoring the children 0 to 4 years of age, be able to see what's happening with recent transmission of tuberculosis. Promoting operational research was the next part that we got involved in, and we commissioned a research agenda, prioritized research agenda to be developed. The prioritized research has been completed. It has now been revised, and our next step is to disseminate it. We have once again been able to convince the editor to consider publishing this research agenda in the International Journal of Fungal Disease, and hopefully this will occur in the near future, helping us with the dissemination of what is required in the, operational research of childhood tuberculosis. Advocacy for children. Being a part of the subgroup has created a number of possibilities to ensure that children are included in the activities. The most important one that we were able to get involved in was thanks to Phil, as everybody has said many times, we were able to get involved in developing the international standards of tuberculosis care to ensure that children were included in every step. And this has happened, and I was quite pleased the other day. A lady came up to me and said, "I think I've seen you before. Aren't you the person that always says children should be included?" And I think that's exactly the involvement that we would like to see, that there is a face for childhood tuberculosis in all committees. So ladies and gentlemen, you can see that group has been a very small group run by a full-time clinician like myself, but I think it shows that if you work through the appropriate structures like the DOTS Expansion Working Group, you're actually able to achieve quite a lot. So in conclusion, I would say the relative advantage of the childhood subgroup has been in policy development. And Fran pointed out to me that the ATS has been involved in policy development for 100 years and has only been involved in the implementation for 1 year. Well, I can say quite clearly that the childhood TB subgroup has been involved in policy development for 2 years and we've got naught years of implementation. So the only way we can see the way forward for the childhood TB working group's policies to be implemented is our continued close collaboration with the DOTS Expansion Working Group to need to get this policy into practice. Now I would like to use this opportunity to invite you all and all those interested in childhood tuberculosis to our annual meeting, which is held on tomorrow between 2 and 5. It's in room 330 and 3301. On the agenda would be the promotion of the implementation in NTPs, promoting child-friendly formulations, what topics we need to pursue in reviewing, how to make the best of routine NTP data, including HIV, correct doses for children, vaccine, research, and any others that might need attention. I invite you all to this meeting. And finally, I have to make some acknowledgements. To achieve the success in this area, you need lots of guidance, and you need a good secretariat. And I'd like to thank Leopold Blanc for his guidance and always opening the door for the Childhood TB Working Group. And I must publicly say that I think I've got the best secretariat of anybody in Dermot Meyer. I know he tells me I don't always do what he tells me to do, but but at least I've got the best person, I believe, in Geneva helping me. Thanks very much, Dermot. I promise to be a good boy next year. And then lastly, I think it's very exciting when you read in the TB strategy this following sentence, that it is there to ensure equitable access of care of international standards to all TB patients, infectious or non-infectious, adults and children, with and without HIV, and with and without drug-resistant TB. In this sort of atmosphere, it makes it very exciting for us to work. Thank you very much for your time and attention.
Thank you, Dr. Roberts, for such a nice presentation on mainstreaming childhood TB as a part of the national TB programs. Now, any questions, suggestions? Yes, please.
Dr. Sheref from Turkey. This area is top area that the universities or the experts are involved in TB subjects, I think. So there is real problem in recording these cases or getting these cases into NTP, and also to give right drug regimens to these groups, because there are experts and here are physicians. So experts are always better for many people. So I think we must think about to get these kind of standard regimen and other things and childhood TB related subjects to work with international pediatricians group and others, because the pediatricians look to their international groups mostly. What do you think about this point? Also, as a university person, what do you think about this subject?
Thank you very much. I mean, I have to identify with that. I am, as I said, a practicing clinician. But I think that's what makes it so very exciting, is that part of the TB subgroup is the IPA, International Pediatric Association. And the International Pediatric Association has invited me to go and give a presentation at the next International Congress so that we can get endorsement from the IPA to this whole program, including the international standards of care, so that persons like yourself and myself can actually therefore have official documents which are endorsed by international organizations saying that this is the international standard of care that we should be practicing for children. And these are the regimens that are recommended by the WHO and international organizations. And these are the correct doses that are, and these are the drug formulations that are available. I think it's a very exciting time because I think we moved into this area just at the right time as the stop, as DOS was changing over to the stop TB strategy. So I have to endorse what you're saying, but I think it's time things are going to change because there are going to be documents to help us.
I think I would like to share and I would like to add, Indian Academy of Pediatricians, the program, national program, Indian program, they took with the Indian Academy of Pediatrics, and we developed the guidelines with the full consensus of the Indian Academy of Pediatrics. The diagnostic criteria, the diagnostic algorithm for pediatric TB, as well as the treatment guidelines for pediatric TB, where now the formulation, friendly formulations for pediatric TB, even the rifampicin in tablet form, for 50 milligram, 100 milligram, they are now being made available. And now it is in pediatric patient-wise boxes for different weight bands have been designed with the help of the Indian Academy of Pediatrics. So that's an important area. Naturally, definitely, we need to work still. The international standard of TB care, they have been also taken into account when Indian Academy of Pediatrics, they designed that. And program is now following those.
Maurice Middleburg with the Global Health Council. Thank you very much for a very interesting presentation, for all the good work of your group. You identified the NTPs as the primary advocacy audience for moving forward with this report, but most of the contact with children takes place through maternal and child health programs or with child-centered NGOs. And I wonder what thought the group has given to working with the child survival programs of major donors, with the MCH programs and ministries of health, and with the major PVOs that work on child survival.
Thank you very much. You will notice on the agenda tomorrow at our working group, that's the first item, is how we're going to do it. And if people like yourselves who've got this experience could come to the meeting and help us how to develop this program, we'd be very pleased. The reason why I'm saying we will work through the DOTS Expansion Working Group, because that's the group that has helped us the most this far in getting to it done. But if we can include other people to help us, it will surely be very, very welcome.
Thank you.
Any other question? Okay, thank you, Dr. Robert. Then may I invite Dr. Vinan Nantolia, the Chair Task Force on Retooling, for his presentation. Dr. Nantolia, please.
Good afternoon to you. I ask you to welcome me to this wonderful community of TB. Some of you knew me in my previous life as a senior health advisor at the Global Fund. Now I am fully with you. What I plan to do is to share with you and to whet your appetite for a process that was kicked off by the Stop TB Partnership Coordinating Board. And the reason why that happened is this. Which one? Here's the mouse. Just quick. Is this, that for the first time in the TB community, we have a pipeline of promising tools. And this pipeline is on the way. In the case of vaccines, if I start from the bottom here, we expect a new vaccine by 2014. So says the global plan. In the case of medicines, we are expecting new medicines or application of existing medicines for the treatment of TB. And we are getting this starting from 2010. and thereafter there are several products in the pipeline. With regard to the medicines, these are drugs that will be coming not as single application drugs, but drugs that are to be used in combination with some of them with existing drugs that we have to improve two things, the efficacy and to try and shorten the treatment cost. In the case of diagnostics, there are three different levels. We are expecting that the different levels, i.e. the national reference laboratory, the peripheral laboratory probably at the district hospital level or the health center where microscopy is the main diagnostic tool, and at the clinic where there is no laboratory diagnosis undertaken at present. All those three levels, they hope that there are new tools that are coming. There are tools for the lowest level, where at present we don't have any laboratory diagnosis, and we expect a urine-based antigen detection test to be made available by 2009. And we expect an antibody assay by 2011. At the peripheral laboratory level, where sputum microscopy is the mainstay, we are first going to have an incremental improvement in the use of the sputum microscopy by way of two-smear microscopy or low-cost fluorescence and bleach treatment. And this is coming within 2000 and beginning 2008 and 2009. And we are expecting additional improvements, including the introduction of a molecular test for TB by 2011. In the case of the reference laboratory level, we are already expecting tools next year. We are expecting the capillary test for species identification. We are expecting to spread the use of the liquid culture for diagnosis and for drug sensitivity testing. We are getting into the use of the phage-based test for drug susceptibility testing. These tools are going into the demonstration phase, and they will be made available anywhere between 2007 and 2008, and then others. So this is the good news. However, the good news also brings problems. One is that these are coming soon. Two, that there are challenges ahead in adopting these tools. And three, that the rapid adoption will require that we start planning and preparing for these tools now. This was the reason that the coordinating board at its sitting in Assisi in November 2005 decided to establish a task force, which they termed the Retooling Task Force, which was to prepare the TB community for the adoption and introduction and implementation of new or improved diagnostics, drugs, and vaccines as they become available. It has clear terms of reference. One, to develop a framework or guideline to guide the discussions by the various stakeholders at various levels, global and national, to consolidate information from the tools working groups, to create dialogue among stakeholders, and facilitate mobilization of resources. It is also expected to consolidate lessons learned from various other innovations, to facilitate the fast tracking of incorporation of these tools in WHO and national policy, enhance communication among working groups, and facilitate the introduction of operations research and in order to generate evidence on how the new tools are working. The composition of the task force is as follows. We have got working group members designated by the chairs. We have the key subgroups, namely laboratory, GDF, and poverty. We have representation of the national TB program managers from high-burden countries. We got the WHO Stop TB department and other WHO relevant departments. And we've got the Stop TB Partnership Secretariat that serves as the secretary of the group. What have we been able to do? In the short time that we have been in existence, starting from July, we had a face-to-face meeting in Geneva of the task force group. We agreed to produce a framework document to guide the discussions at national and global level. We commissioned MSH to work with us in starting the drafting of the document under the guidance of a core group within the task force, and we have had weekly teleconferences since then. We are expecting to complete the drafting of this guide tonight to be presented to the coordinating board at its meeting in November in Jakarta. Why do we need this guide? The guide is meant to provide a common framework to discuss the adoption of new tools for TB control. It's meant to identify some key issues that need to be addressed to accelerate the adoption, introduction, and implementation of new tools, and to provide guidance on what actions are needed for the adoption, access, and proper use of these tools by the community. There are the following key elements. When we talk about availability of tools in the context of the task force, we are talking about the tools that have already, in the case of diagnostics, been introduced in national disease control programs of a few selected countries, and where they have shown that they can be used efficiently and that they save time or they have value in a real life situation. And for the drugs, is that the drugs have gone through phase 3. Next key elements. The document identifies key challenges to adoption and implementation of new tools. It proposes key principles to facilitate appropriate and timely adoption of and implementation of these tools, and provides an overview of technical and operational considerations, both for the global level partners and the national level partners. The document also provides a series of annexes. One is an overview of selected new medicines, diagnostics, and vaccines that are in the pipeline. A listing of key actions for the adoption and implementation of each technology category, i.e. for diagnostics, for drugs, or for vaccine. There's an illustrative generic timeline for adoption, introduction, and implementation. And there's a list of key readings that provide more detailed discussions of the issues and the roadmaps to addressing those issues. This is the contents of that report. The report is going to be ready after the coordinating board gives approval, in which case then we shall embark on the following. First, we need to expand the task force membership. So we need additional national TB program managers on the task force. We need members of WHO Essential Medicines and Policy Group on the task force. We need additional members for ACSM and DOTS Plus and DOTS Expansion Working Groups on the task force, because this is a practical thing. We are now going to be implementing the dissemination of this document, because after the coordinating board has approved, we are going to disseminate this document in a number of ways, because the intended recipient of this document are yourselves and those outside here. Then we shall embark on the development of additional document and guidelines, which include the guidance on stakeholder engagement. I think that was touched on sometime this afternoon. We shall be updating the pipeline chart so that all the stakeholders know what is coming and when it is coming. We shall be putting in place a retooling, monitoring, and evaluation framework. We shall be developing illustrative timelines for post-regulatory processes. And we shall then also produce recommendations specific for each new tool that will be coming up for adoption. It's a full program. I'm sorry, I can't give you copies. I have copies They are in draft form, but I am not authorized to give you until after A, we have finalized the version that goes to the coordinating board, and B, after the coordinating board has approved it. Only then can you have it. But all I can tell you that it's good news for the Stop TB movement. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Nantulia, for this information on the newer tools. Yes, any question, please? Yes, please.
Vedant, thank you very much. I share in the excitement. And as I look at the plan that has been developed, I'm struck by one missing link. That is the assumption that we have the capacity right now to rapidly move into phase three trials. I would propose to you that if right now, here today, I were to say we have three promising drugs that in combination could cure TB in 4 months, we would be struggling with how to fund and resource that very necessary phase three trial that the group is indeed requiring appropriately before we implement it into program action. So I would invite the group when you get together tonight to highlight that as a missing link that needs to be resolved fairly quickly. I believe that on Saturday we're expecting to hear from the Treatment Action Group the dismal situation of the globe in spending for TB resources and in research and development and how much more we need to do in that. But I share with you in the excitement of all these very promising things that we could be evaluating soon. The last comment I would like to share is that in light of the presence of extensively resistant tuberculosis, we're going to be challenged to consider and struggle through how would you evaluate some of the drugs on a compassionate protocol basis and not have to wait for the usual events to take place. We in the United States have spoken with individuals from FDA who tell us, you know, number one, it can be done, it has been done, and most recently, Tibotec released a new drug for multi-drug resistant HIV last July, and it was evaluated in a shorter than usual time frame. And we're going to need to challenge ourselves also to think along these lines so that we can make then progress that's a bit more remarkable than as have been stated. But great job. I'm glad that you're here with us full time.
Thank you. Shall I? The first statement, I concur with you, and I'll take that message to the group. If my colleague from TB, Global Drug Alliance, is here, might want to... Is Nina in here? Okay, she may want to give a comment on that, but we take your point as constructive. The second point is acceleration. Absolutely so. We need to accelerate the process now. The timeline I've given you in that chart, that timeline has already been overtaken. For instance, in diagnostics, the demonstration phase, which was supposed to start next year, is starting now. So, because of the urgency to move these tools in the field, we need to accelerate the processes. Nina, would you like, do you have a comment? No, she doesn't. She agrees with the sentiment. Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Hubert, please.
Phil Hopewell, San Francisco. Both your presentation, Vinand, and Rob Gee's presentation point out that things are changing fairly rapidly, or have the potential for changing fairly rapidly anyway. And in several presentations today, the international standards for tuberculosis care have been mentioned. That was a fairly arduous process in putting those together. And when one thinks of standards, one thinks of things that are somewhat set in stone. But I'd like to point out, as has been illustrated by your presentation particularly, and also by Rob's, that standards need to change. And so what we intend to do with the international standards is to reconvene at least a portion of the committee that worked on the standards originally, provide surveillance of the areas in which we develop standards, and try to, on an annual basis, update these so that they incorporate the new changes, the advances that you've outlined, some of the changes that Rob described, and make this truly a living document. And I think that's sort of an important generic point that has to be made, that these days, hopefully, things will be changing rapidly, and there need to be mechanisms in place to enable rapid changes in the documents, the recommendations, guidelines that are all related to TB care and control.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Hi, John Ritterhoff, CDC, and also with the Stop TB Lab subgroup. I did want to second, this is an important topic in a relation to some of your slides on the new diagnostics. And I think this is a big question. I think there's a concern among a lot of the laboratory people that we're oversimplifying the solution in looking at new diagnostics, and we forget that some of the big differences between the industrialized countries and a lot of the high-burden countries is the fact that the industrialized countries also have universal laboratory standards and regulations that govern this testing. And I think it's something we have to work on new diagnostics, but we also have to strengthen the laboratory system in general if they're going to be able to successfully implement these diagnostics. And you're already hearing stories, some things we experience in our country with the liquid culture systems, where we found that 2 to 4% of all our TB cases were due to laboratory contamination in the United States. This where you have universal regulations, high credentials, doctoral level requirements for any laboratory director. So I think this is an important topic. I think sometimes it's underestimated. And I also think that the TB community is not going to be able to do this alone. They need to work with the other communities and really have universal laboratory quality standards.
Thank you. Okay. First, Philip, nice to see you. I agree with you. This process is going to be a continuing iterative process. Yes, this morning I woke up and I was asking myself, I said, well, maybe one of these days I'll just write an article about the following, that diagnosis is expensive, yes? Try out absence of diagnosis and you'll see the difference. The strengthening of laboratory services is absolutely critical if the retooling in diagnostics is going to succeed. And so the idea of the retooling is to stimulate discussions at local and global level to start thinking about the various processes. And this document does touch upon that, and we shall be saying more about that in subsequent documents, because the state of preparedness of laboratory services will influence the speed and success in retooling the diagnostic services. FIND got a project proposal that was endorsed at the Clinton Foundation, if you have looked at our website, where we are going to look at this in particular for sub-Saharan Africa, starting with a pilot of the model in Uganda to see how you can prepare laboratories for introduction of these tools when they become available. But it's not going to be simple, it's not going to be cheap, but the price is worth it, because the cost of not doing so is much, much bigger than that.
Thank you. I'm Jerry Friedland from New Haven, Connecticut, and KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa. I'd like to make a suggestion, if I may, about the task force and its composition and membership. In the era of HIV, TB co-infection, and TB-HIV collaboration and integration, it doesn't seem like there's sufficient representation from the HIV side of this very, very important interaction. I wonder if the task force might be strengthened by the inclusion of additional people, person, from the HIV world?
Point taken. I shall throw that to TB HIV working group, because these memberships are coming from the working groups.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Nantula. Then we'll have the final presentation on the span of TB control to eliminate as a global emergency. Dr. Aldinga, please.
Mr. Chairman, colleagues, friends, let me start to express my appreciation for the opportunity to what Bertie called have a swan song today. It mirrors my appreciation for being involved in tuberculosis control for about 13 years. And I mean that seriously. It has been a great experience. When I sent this title of this swan song to Paul Nunn to ask his opinion about this title, he said, well, it looks fine, but please explain to me what means span. I was a bit surprised because he is a sort of linguistical person. He knows a lot about the English language, much more than I do. But by span, I mean how wide you have to throw the net in order to catch the fish that you want to catch. And the fish you want to catch is elimination of tuberculosis. And I hope that this presentation will clarify the meaning of that word. When you are at that point in time that you are overviewing 13 years of involvement in tuberculosis control, a number of questions spring to mind. Those questions are very simple. The answers are not. And I specify that a bit in the following. So I'm now at 2006. And what you do at such a moment, you look back and you look forth. And when you look back, you wonder what sort of progress has been made over that period in terms of efforts and in terms of impact. And also, when you look forward, try to learn a bit from what you have seen and what has happened for the future and think about what should happen and how to do that. And that is the significance of the arrows that link the efforts with the impact, with the what and with the how. So I just follow that simple sequence of questions and come to a bit more complex answers. These answers are very personal, so it is just my view, and I would be happy if you would disagree with those, so then we have something to discuss about. So let's first go into the efforts. And what I'll show you is the shortest summary of what I could find of a success story. Is this. So I started a moment in time that I became involved in tuberculosis. It was in 93, and I didn't know anything about TB control at all. And I needed to chair a meeting in London. It was just succeeding the London School of Tropical Hygiene meeting, Back to the Future, I think it was called. And it was the so-called CARC meeting. And there was a lunchtime just between the end of the meeting and the start of CARC. And Richard Boomgaarder, present in this room, took me to lunch in Charlotte Street. I knew Charlotte Street very well because I had been working in University College, which is very close to Keppel Street, where the London School is. And that was about to start. And in the end of the day, in the evening, I found myself on the BBC News at 9 o'clock, calling a global emergency of something I did know very little about. But they taught me quite a lot. And I, as I said, appreciate very much what I've learned over those 13 years. And what you see here is the sort of milestones that I could think of. Easy in the beginning, because 1991, the targets were set, the 70 and 85% discussed in this room very regularly today and yesterday. And then some initiatives, the global emergency that I mentioned, the control framework that would then finally become the DOS strategy, the monitoring systems were set up and thought of, and I think it was in Oslo. And then I think this frame became too small to see what sort of developments took on. And the red line you see there is one component of the finances. So the drawn red line is the finances that come from developing agencies expenditure going up to 400 million. So every year, this is the time frame underneath. And I drew a dotted line, what I expected would be extension backwards to 1991 when the targets were established by the World Health Assembly. A success story. This success story makes people believe that the TB program is the standard model of a successful partnership. And we think, because they say that we are that, we think that we are a very good, successful partnership. And I think that we are right. But we are not as good as we think, I think. So let's go into that. Because there are some limitations, also in that time, and I'm not pointing fingers because I'm part, very integral part of the history since 1993. But let's first look at one thing, TB-HIV, for instance. I have been responsible, I will end my chairmanship now, for TB-HIV that started as a working group at least in 2000, not 2001 formally, first working group meeting. At the time of the London meeting, 1993, it was already in that symposium at the London School Back to the Future well known that HIV was a high risk factor for TB. There were publications. One of those are of Kevin de Kock, I think, and Al. He is present. I saw him walking around in the room. But there were others warning that this was an upcoming disaster. And when the targets were not met, we noticed that in 97, I think, about 96, we were afraid that we would not meet the 2000, later the 2005 targets. We set up the London Ad Hoc Committee. The London Ad Hoc Committee that advised about, for instance, the Global Drug Facility and many other things that have been implemented, quoted often by Mario. But in that report of the London Ad Hoc Committee, there is no mention of HIV/AIDS. And I plotted here, just to remind ourselves of what we have apparently missed there, I plotted here the number of people living with HIV/AIDS at that time. And you see that we're already over 25 million people living with HIV/AIDS. And then, when the partnership came into existence after the compromise in Bellagio, some turnover of the WHO-led a global program to the partnership-led program, then TB-HIV came into existence. And it has been, I can testify that from personal experience, a very, very slow implementation. So that was not so easy. That was not such a success story. And still, we have seen the reports yesterday and today, it is not at a level where it should be. A second example. Human resources for health. Human resources for health are nowadays, today, and yesterday, and almost during 2 years or so, flagged as an enormous problem. They were already flagged as an enormous problem in the London Ad Hoc Committee. They were listed there. But there was little action taken. And when in 2002 we looked at 2005, the next date for the same targets of 2000, we thought again, well, human resources for health is not even a problem, it is a health work crisis. And it took till 2005 the stack before a task force was established that we should address health system strengthening, now working very hard on that. And in the left upper corner here, you see a pyramid, what I call a pyramid. You can call it anything. And the pyramid reflects the composition of the kind of human resources that we need to deliver the interventions to the patients. And on the top of the pyramid is the programmatic part. So that are the people running the national program and reaching out to the services that have to deliver the interventions. But the real problem in numbers and in quality, I think, is in particular in the big part, the underlying part of the general health services that need to deliver these interventions. And with the general health services, I include also the private sector. And still, I think we have a focus on the programmatic part thereof. But we have very little impact yet, and we do not really know how to address the general health services from the TB perspective. Maybe we should not address it from the TB perspective, but we should look for alliances that can help us to build or help to build that workforce in countries. There are some commonalities commonalities between TB, HIV. I'm trying to learn lessons, you see, because I'm just following my points and my efforts and impact and what and how for the future, trying to learn lessons to see if we can learn something for the future. There are commonalities between TB, HIV, and HRH, Human Resources for Health. Both of them are crucial for TB control. We will all underscore that. And they all, both, the fact that they were not addressed in time was not due to a lack of knowledge. We knew that there were problems. In the case of TB, HIV, that knowledge was strategically ignored. And in the case of Human Resources for Health, we were slow in implementing or trying to implement interventions. It may be that they also have a commonality that they require actors outside the program for implementation. And that is not so easy for a program like tuberculosis control to do that. And what is also a reality for both, I think, is that the Stop TB partnership helped in tabling these issues. So with respect to some answer to my question about what sort of efforts have been achieved since 1993 till 2006, I think the efforts rose exponentially in most areas, and we should be proud of that. And this holds true for the program, so that's the partners in the program, the structure, the strategy, the actions, all of that. And also the finances. We have far too little, as Mark keeps telling us, and that is true. But on the other hand, we have achieved a substantial increase. But we have also turned a blind eye for at least two important topics, and that is TB, HIV and Human Resources for Health. And we have to reflect on that when we think about the future. Because there was no, as far as I could see, explicit reason why we did that. It might have been that outside program collaboration is a difficult thing to do for programs, also for the TB program. And it may also be that it's difficult to find the know-how, how to do that, how to interact with these other actors at a global level, at a regional level, and at the country level. Next question, impact. What has been the impact of all these efforts? Well, I did not know anything about tuberculosis, and know now a little, I think. But the first lesson that was told to me was that we have targets, and you have to pursue those targets. And the targets are case finding and treatment, successful treatment. And those targets were established by the World Health Assembly, 70% and 85%, and we know that it will cause a TB incidence decrease of something like 7%. Well, this is the logic. So it does not really matter whether you find cases or you cure them. They weigh the same in the final calculation. So if you detect 70% of the cases that are estimated in a certain country and you cure 85%, you, at the end of the day, cure almost 60% of all estimated cases. And this leads to a decrease of 7%. So I had minus 7%. That 7% is a bit flexible in history. Sometimes you read 6%, sometimes you read 7 to 8%. And these are based on assumptions and model calculations. You can do this very simple arithmetic, not only for the targets. You can do it for any case detection rate and any cure rate. Let's take, for instance, 2004. We are now much further. We are almost 60% case detection and close to 85% cure rate, so the number goes up. But let's take 2004. I had that number available. So 43.5% of all TB cases cured, and Mark points out, of course, that these are not all TB cases because it's smear positive, etc. But let's take that for a minute. And this would lead to a TB incidence change of minus 5%. So that is the theory. This is the practice. Chris has shown this several times, and we know that because we are all following this year by year, and we look at these graphs regularly because we want to see that impact. We want to see these black dots going down. And they do not go down. They do not go down yet. So Mario told us yesterday it will go down because the impact will come. The logic will tell us that it has to go down. And we have some promise today. But when you look at the numbers, this is the simple number. The TB incidence change in 2004, the predicted one is minus 5%. The reported one, this includes Sub-Saharan Africa and former Soviet Union, so those two regions where there have been problems with TB incidence for well-known, to some extent, well-known reasons. So when you include them, there is a 0.6% increase, and when you exclude those, there is a small decrease in TB incidence, but it's nothing like the predicted number. You can do the calculation, the product of case detection and cure rate, for any country. So maybe we're looking at too big a level, too macro. We go to the more specific thing. And we take these graphs that we find, gratefully find, every year in that very nice report that the people in Geneva make for us. This is the calculation based on those graphs. Those are the graphs of treatment success and dots detection rate. Okay? So what you find on the horizontal axis is again the same product of case detection and cure rate. The almost 60% overall cure rate is a green line. To the right of that line, you find all the countries that effectively have reached the targets. So this is the double set that Chris was mentioning this morning. So I do not take into account the overlap. This is just an overall discussion. And to the left, the countries that have not yet reached that. And you see that there is an enormous scatter. So what you see in this graph is that countries varies a lot with respect to that TB incidence change. That is on the vertical axis. Some countries go up to plus 10% almost. Other countries go down to even below minus 10%. But there doesn't seem to be a very strong trend. You can do, of course, some calculation for that, and you can find a very low correlation coefficient for that. And you see, because there are blue squares or diamonds, and there are red dots, that this holds true for Africa High and the former Soviet Union, equally well as for the rest of the world. That's that kind of scatter. So there are a number of possible explanations for this. It may be that the data is not good. That is, of course, the first thing to think about. No good data. It may be that we haven't waited sufficiently long and that the TB incidence change will come in 5 years' time or so. It may be that there are other factors that are important. And the question is, of course, can we already tell now what is going on and can we adapt to that so that we do not turn a blind eye for messages that may be here or may not be here. So, impact, well, there has been an impressive progress towards targets, and we note the acceleration from 2000 onwards. In my interpretation, this has to do with the creation of the Stop TB partnership, in effect. What happens is, I think, in efforts in organizations, is that sometimes you have to go through a mutation to go to a new extra level of ability, of capacity. That has happened with the TB program, and it has accelerated. You know that this is going up very rapidly to the 70% case detection. So that is impressive. But there has been little change in TB incidence globally, much less than predicted, and also outside the critical areas of Sub-Saharan Africa and the former Soviet Union. And there is an enormous country-to-country variation. Questions, as I said, reliable data? Do we need to wait longer? Is there? No. Impact, or are there other factors with a large impact? So what we can do is we can just go to the more micro side of things and try to find countries where the data are reliable and look at countries where we have some timeline. Then we can indeed deal maybe to some extent with the questions of reliable data and the time you have to wait to see the impact. So that may be then be used for what do we need to do, looking at two countries. I have, without any bias, of course, selected the Netherlands of one of the countries that we could look at, and the other one is a country where the KNCV has been and is very active and is now doing a very extensive study precisely to find out the reason why TB incidence does not change in Vietnam. So there are good data. And I start off with my home country. This is what I have from my home country, borrowed from the KNCV. And there has been a very disease-specific
mortality registration since 1900. I could for that reason also have chosen Wales, I think, or Sweden, or some other Western European country. They have the same data and they show the same message. And then, since 1950, there is morbidity data, so the amount of data and the reliability even further increases. And what I try to derive from that is, of course, the TB incidence change. And I tried to do that before chemotherapy was around and after chemotherapy was around. And I was helped by famous works of Carl Stiblo, and you get numbers for that, you see. In Carl Stiblo's book, first edition, I think, 84, thereafter, second edition, and added to that in 91, you find before 1940, 3.5% annual decrease in TB incidence before the First World War, and between the two world wars, 5.7% going down without antibiotics, going down in TB incidence. And after 1950, there appears to be an acceleration. Now the speed is minus 12%, so this is a percentage decrease, the minus sign is in the decrease in the title. Interestingly enough, in the book of Stiblo, you find many other examples, and I picked out a study from the Eskimos. And the Eskimos, before the introduction of chemotherapy, had a very high death rate and very little change in that death rate. So it was a constant at a very extremely high level. And after the introduction of chemotherapy, Stiblo reports that there is a decrease in TB incidence of 17%. No model predicts that there can be, due to case finding and treatment, if you have 100% for both, a decrease rate of TB incidence of 17%. So the messages here are, I think, that before introduction of chemotherapy in the Netherlands, other factors have contributed to the decrease of tuberculosis. And in the case of the Eskimos, there's probably a mix. And yesterday, Martin Borkov told me that there has indeed been a study comparing the study that showed the impact in the Eskimos of chemotherapy, looking at the control group. And there were also substantial decreases in incidence in the control group. So the question here is what the interpretation is. But it points to it that there are other factors involved in these examples. Let's go to Vietnam. What we know from Vietnam, that it has been in the target zone since 1996. So if we need to wait for longer than 10 years, I'm fearing that it may be difficult to reach the Millennium Development Goals if you have to wait so long for impact for treatment to take on. It has been there since 1996, for 10 years. So reach the targets, and when you look at the notification rates, so look again at the incidence has been stable since 1996, 1997, so no change in TB incidence. And I'm going now to show a slide that is different from the one that Chris showed this morning about Vietnam. And all these slides of data from Vietnam come from the KNCV. This shows that when you look at this distribution of where, in what groups of the population, the annual incidence rate goes up and where it goes down, then you see that in the young group, as Chris presented this morning, young men, 15 to 40, 34, there's an enormous increase in TB incidence, cancelling fully the beneficial effects that you see in the middle age groups in women and men. But these people, these young men, live in remote areas, which makes it very unlikely, and other data of KNCV support that vision, that HIV is responsible for that in this country. And the answer that the KNCV gave me for what is then the reason is, the reason is that we do not know. We do not know what is going on. But the effect is that at the country level, being at in the target zone for 10 years does not lead over that period of time to a reduction of TB incidence. So what do we think then of this? Well, this is my personal opinion. TB incidence changes downwards. I think there's a lot of evidence that it does that, and I still believe that that is the case. But we should draw the consequences of that, and I come to that. It goes downwards by case finding and treatment. But it can go up or downwards by socioeconomic factors.
And that is through mechanisms that we do not really fully understand. And those mechanisms are active outside sub-Saharan Africa and the former Soviet Union. And what they do, so not only in those areas, it's not just HIV/AIDS and then this not very well understood phenomena in the former Soviet Union. But what it does, effectively, it is limiting the Stop-TB impact. But they are, for TB control, of substantial importance. And therefore, I think that we need to reveal the impact and the nature of these factors. And we need to address these factors in strategy, in advocacy, and in interventions. How? Well, we have the global plan. And we have the WHO-recommended Stop-TB strategy. And we listened yesterday to reports from all sorts of countries and regions how these six components are implemented. So this strategy is pursued vigorously, and I think that is right. I think this strategy should be pushed vigorously. But I think that if you believe that other factors are active, that it may well be that without the Stop-TB efforts, and I include in that a broad series of efforts, maybe not only DOTS, but also other effective mechanisms of dealing with TB. Without those efforts, TB would probably rise, because we believe that case finding and treatment leads to a decrease of TB, and no one is telling us that the baseline is just zero. The baseline from which you have to count these impacts can go up, and it is not unlikely that it goes up. So those activities must be extended and improved rapidly, in particular in sub-Saharan Africa. Very good reasons for that. That is the area for TB-HIV. There is a very dangerous area for multi-drug resistance, like in other areas, and extreme drug resistance. In that approach, we should always have the patient at the center, because you can only reach the impact in the population when you reach the patient, because that is the key to the population. And you can only think that that is successful when you have better tools and better service delivery. So those are prerequisite to affect that. But you see that I have three little dots at the end of the title of this frame. And I think that we should also push socio-economic prevention. That is not in the standards of care, the heart of the matter, what we know now in implementation. But we should also reach out to the other side of prevention. We should not turn a blind eye for components that are important, that influence TB incidence. And therefore, I think we should try to surface the impact of the socio-economic factors on TB control. And we should study them aggressively in order to reveal the precise nature and transfer that knowledge. It will take time. Transfer that knowledge into interventions. And then we have to position that socio-economic prevention for TB in the overall development agenda. And then, in to do that, we can only reach that if we foster Stop-TB leadership through collaboration. So, this is the title, a bit expanded, of my swan song. The span of TB control should not only include case finding and treatment, but also socio-economic prevention to eliminate the global emergency. Because at the end of the day, there is just one question that requires an answer. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Ojinga, for such explicit presentation. So any addition, comments, remarks, or questions?
Thijs, this was excellent. Thank you for a very thoughtful and provocative overview. I just wanted to jog my own memory. Help me here. Did the Eskimo data, is that the Comstock study relying very heavily on preventive therapy at a population basis? Because if that's the case, I think there's a hidden nugget in there, because as a community, we have underutilized that as an intervention tool. But I just want to make sure that that's the type of information that you were alluding to.
I took this number from Stiblo's book, and Stiblo's comments were, this number you can expect maybe, because you can reach out so intensively to the Eskimo population that you can reach 100%. Right. That was the comment.
Yes, please.
Well, I have no comment except that I agree fully with what you said, and so it's really refreshing to see that after all these years spent in TB control, you essentially give us what actually most of us are trying to do. So for that, I think I fully agree with you. I just wanted to thank you on behalf of the World Health Organization, all my colleagues that have worked with you for the past, as you said, 13 years, because you have been inspiring to all of us, and you have been able, actually, in many cases, to push us further and to stimulate further research, further analysis, and for that I think you should be congratulated by all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, then. I think it's the time to now conclude. Very difficult task. Actually, the two important in the evening session, the first half and the second half, they have two different kinds of presentations we had. First, we had for the Stop TB partnership strategy, the two important component, empowering patient and communities and engaging all care providers, that discussion, and then in the last session we had this working groups, the update on the working groups. So the presentations so far ACSM was there, the advocacy, communication, and social mobilization. This has clearly indicated that we need to scale up these activities if we want to achieve the set global targets of case detection as well as the cure rates. Because without involving community, without involving patients, perhaps it's not possible at all. So we have to think now on those lines. And as said by Dr. Paul, that we need to give the same importance to the ACSM activities as we are talking about regarding the lab strengthening. So at the same time, we should talk of the ACSM activities. These need to address not only the case setting, but they need to involve the patients and address all those issues which are really important in the patient perspective. That's important. So we have to think of those plans. The presentations naturally so far the involvement of all other care providers when we talk about then we have to think of it's not only the one pathy, that's allopathy system, but we have to think of the other providers also. For example, in India we have different, I think that the different other countries, they have their own system of medicine. We have Yunani system, Siddha, and Ayurveda, and then what Pakistan, my fellow from Pakistan, he raised the question of the involvement of traditional healers. So all have to be taken into account. And when we talk about community participations, without the participation of all these providers which are part of the community, in whom the community have their faith, without their involvement, perhaps we can't think of the involvement of the community. And simply we are talking if we are not involving these people. But yes, what should be the level, what should be the areas of their involvement, that has to be thought, and that need to be taken into consideration at the local level only. Coming to the last, these presentation of the partnership working groups, perhaps this update on the childhood TB and on the newer tools are really encouraging, and the information on the availability of the newer tools very shortly, for which we have to be ready to plan and then to implement those, is a good news, and
Similarly, all countries need to work, and for that the working group on the TB, periodic TB, they have to assist the countries in designing the programs for periodic TB so that it becomes a part of the national TB program. Yes, the last part. It's not. It doesn't mean that we should feel discouraged that we are not reaching what we desired, or the impact is not that good somehow. Because there are a number of explanations given already, but one of the explanations perhaps is that in these last 10 years, perhaps it was mainly expansion of the DOTS program was there. And now, as in most part of the country, the DOTS expansion has already occurred. So now the impact, global impact, then we can thought of, but that can be, one can be an exception of the Vietnam, where from 1996, they are achieving those targets, but why there is no change in the incidence? Perhaps that need to be elaborated, discussed in, or some kind of study need to be carried out there to find out what are those reasons. But the good news is that if we think of eliminating socio-economic part also, while we think of achieving TB targets, the socio-economic part has also to be taken into consideration, and implementing the stop TB strategy, now all components as a comprehensive way, all components are to be taken care of while we implement the activities. Perhaps that will help us to achieve our ultimate objective, that the TB then after some time, if not in 2015, by that time we'll achieve the MDGs, but after some time after 2015 we can say that now it's not a global emergency, TB is not a global emergency. And let us go out with this positive thinking only. And if anything, anybody would like to add to this, then no, nothing. Okay, then I would like to thank all the speakers. All the participants, thank you very much. And this will break for the day, and tomorrow at 8:30 perhaps all the sessions will start. Thank you very much.